Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
That you fear most in football staring you right in the face.
Mark Grody.
I call him a maniac. Stone maniac.
Covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
You had to overcome the mystique. It was almost like an odor. He exuded a kind of a presence.
Sideline reporter for Bears Radio, WBBM.
His whole damn life was football. Wasn't driving a pretty car. Wasn't going to the local bar and pounding your chest, I'm the greatest. It was the opposite.
Mark Grody.
He was Moby Dick in a goldfish bowl.
Mark Grody with Danny Parkins on 670 The Score.
On the Alpamonte Nissan Hotline, Alpamonte Nissan in Melrose Park is our Bears reporter, Moby Ditka. Grody, how you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing well, you guys. We had Matt Nagy speaking today, a couple from Nick Foles that I want you to hear. And let's just jump right in here because I know you guys were talking about Le'Veon Bell earlier. And Matt Nagy was asked about him, the fact that he is out there and potentially available. I don't have the audio here right now. We had some technical difficulties, but I will tell you what Matt Nagy said. And he said, quote, "I think he's a good running back. That stuff that I leave up to Ryan," that'd be Ryan Pace, the Bears general manager. And then Matt Nagy went on to say, and he made this very clear, he said, "We absolutely love our running backs." So to me, gentlemen, that's a head coach saying the right things. He gave him a good ranking, not a great ranking. He leaves it up to his boss, and of course, he loves the running backs that he has. So that's it. From Matt Nagy's perspective, it doesn't sound like there's interest, but who knows?
Cordarrelle Patterson just tweeted, "Sorry, friends, I'm like 0-7 with this recruiting bleep, so I'm done with it, LOL." So that either means that he tried to get Le'Veon Bell to the Bears and was unsuccessful, or he's tried to get dudes to the Bears in the past and they didn't sign here, so he's not even going to try to get Le'Veon Bell. One of the two, I'm not sure which.
Yeah, it's possible. Then there was the defensive guy whose name is escaping me right now that Cordarrelle Patterson was recruiting, the defensive lineman. I can't think of it. That's it, Snacks Harrison. It might be that. It might be him that to whom he's referring. Or actually one of the 0-7. But, yeah, I mean, it is possible that he's referring directly to Le'Veon Bell, who, by the way, has 1.8 million Twitter followers, Le'Veon Bell. That's a lot of Twitter followers. I mean, he's got to be top 20 in the NFL. But Bell, he's played in two games this year, 19 rushes, 74 yards. He hasn't had a real year, guys, since 2017, when he did have 1,200 rushing yards, but he's only 28 years old. I don't know what he thinks he's got left in the proverbial tank, if he's just, at this point, a dissatisfied player who's fully motivated at this point. So I don't know what Bell wants or what teams want from him at this point.
Mark, we saw things get a little testy, a little heated between Matt Nagy and Nick Foles on the sideline last Thursday. Were they asked about that exchange and what exactly that was all about?
Well, as a matter of fact, that was the first question that I asked Nick Foles. I said, you know, we've been talking about this thing all week from Matt Nagy's side of it. Mr. Foles, what was your perspective on the heated sideline conversation that you had against
him? You know, the animation, it was brought to my attention, obviously, answering questions, and it really wasn't as big of a deal as people think it was. It was more just Nags and I talking. I mean, I've known Nags for a while, so it was just me explaining, you know, sort of my thought process in a situation of, you know, a way to attack the defense. And that's part of our relationship as we go forward is, you know, these are the first games where he's called plays and I've been his quarterback, like where he's called plays. So just trying to think of different situations, maybe in my past where we've done certain things. I'm not trying to be revealing. That's why I'm not going to give you all that. But Nags and I are on the same page. There was nothing heated at all. It was just him and I just in the game, you know, trying to get better, pushing forward. But, you know, we were just having a good conversation. I was just, I saw something out there and I just really wanted to take advantage of it.
Yeah, so that pretty much syncs up with what Matt Nagy was saying. And the part about the revealing, the question that I asked directly to him was, did it work? Did the conversation work? Because what Matt Nagy told us was that they didn't have the plays to do what he wanted to do down there, that they had some specific red zone things that Matt Nagy wanted. And so I asked, did you get that together? He just said what he said, and they said they had a productive practice. So my guess is, guys, that, yeah, that Matt Nagy probably listened to his veteran, willful quarterback and probably is accommodating him in that spot if it is to occur again, to where Foles will have some more autonomy and the ability, the luxury, the choice of moving more quickly if he'd like. As he said, he didn't reveal that specifically, but I'd be shocked if Matt Nagy didn't listen to his quarterback.
Grody, whether you want to answer this or play any more audio from Foles, your prerogative, but how has it been different with the weekly address from the quarterback that every NFL team gets, with it being Nick Foles from Mitch Trubisky?
Well, you could tell that the words that Nick Foles uses are his own words. When we spoke to Mitchell Trubisky, and you guys know this, Trubisky was mostly coaching points. He was regurgitating, like a good soldier, everything that his coaches said. Because, and you could go back and pretty much hear exact words that Matt Nagy would use, and those would come out of the mouth of Mitchell Trubisky. So it typically came across as pretty dry. There wasn't usually any original thought from Trubisky about what was going on. Very little personality. With Nick Foles, there is a big difference, because you could tell a lot of it is and has been him drawing on his experience, what he's done in the past, what his opinions on actual plays and actual players and what he sees. And then you're getting good answers out of him. So it's the difference, I think, maybe not necessarily just between Mitch Trubisky, but the difference between a young quarterback and a veteran quarterback, one who feels he can speak his mind a little bit more. And don't get me wrong, I mean, Foles is still, you know, giving the coaching points and saying what he hears from Matt Nagy and saying that, yes, we've got to be more detailed, just like Matt Nagy said and all of that. But it's a good question, Parco, because it is vastly different from what we heard from Mitchell Trubisky. We'll see if it keeps up.
Do you think the team is reacting to that, to the different leadership style and this different way of talking to the media? Do you think the guys are rallying around Nick Foles and 100% buying into a new QB?
I don't know yet. I don't know. I think that because the impression I got, and I haven't been in the locker room, obviously, one time this year, but in the first 2 years of Mitchell Trubisky, I could tell you that the players really liked Mitchell Trubisky, still like Mitchell Trubisky, and that they were behind him, worked out with him in the offseason. We all know about that. When he was benched, you had not only offensive players coming up to him and, you know, giving him hugs and sort of consoling him in that sports consoling way. You had defensive players, offensive players. So I think he was well liked. I think after the first game where Nick Foles had the 3-touchdown game against Atlanta and the comeback, I think that some of the reactions from receivers like Javon Wims told you some things like, wow, I mean, they're throwing down, he's throwing down the field. And some amazing things are happening, things that didn't happen on Mitchell Trubisky's watch. However, since then, Nick Foles has had 2 mediocre games. You know, the Tampa Bay game, he made some huge plays, you know, the one to Cordarrelle Patterson and the one to David Montgomery, but for the most part, he could not have graded out well in that game and certainly didn't grade out well against Indianapolis. So I think until Nick Foles has a complete game where you get the full Nick Foles experience, where he leads you to a win from the start of a game to the end of the game, I think he's still earning that respect and the leadership in the room. And that's another thing, too, and sorry for rambling on here, but Cordarrelle Patterson had said before the season even started that he was seeing leadership from Trubisky that he hadn't seen up until this very point. And there were guys going to bat for Trubisky. So I would say, not having been in the locker room, that Foles still has some earning of respect to do for those players.
Mark Grody with us, Danny Parkins Show, Rami Makhlouf in all week. Nick Foles and Matt Nagy spoke today, so we're getting the report from Moby Ditka. Foles on what the offense identity is or isn't? I mean, how is he describing what the hell kind of offense they're trying to run over there?
I love this question, and it was the final question of the press conference, because I feel like this is a question we've been asking of Bears coaches, coordinators, quarterbacks for a decade now. What exactly, just when we think we know what the identity of a Bears offense is, we don't know what it is. I don't know if you guys will be satisfied with the answer you're going to hear from Foles, but he was asked the question exactly like that. What is this offense, Nick Foles?
I think it's an offense that, you know, every single play will be dangerous and it'll be tough, and there won't be any plays to where, you know, the defense recognizes what we're doing, and it'll really come down to just the only way we beat ourselves is if we don't execute the play, because they'll be there. And, you know, what does that look like? I don't know yet, and I'm not going to tell y'all. I have some ideas and we have some ideas, but it's just continue to believe, it's continue to work. And, you know, right now we're working through it, and we've been able to make big plays at big times. We've won these games as a team. Have they been pretty? No, but we found a way to win, which is hard in this league. It's very hard. But we want to get to the point where every single play we're dangerous and we can just roll and, you know, put some more points on the board. And that really changes the game and makes it very tough for our opponents. But, you know, right now we really got to focus on those little details and get them right, or we won't be able to do that.
Yeah, and I think the only time that this offense has looked dangerous was, again, back to that Atlanta game where they were successfully throwing the ball down the field. I think that that's what they want the identity to be. You know, Matt Nagy does, and that is specifically throwing the ball down the field and making it clean, being unpredictable, because the Bears have, again, unfortunately, in the last couple of games, reversed or resorted back to being somewhat predictable. And I get it, against Tampa Bay, you're down 13, you probably have to start passing the ball, but 25 yards running and 35 yards running in back-to-back games is not going to cut it either. So balance. However, I think we'd all like to see the Bears throw the ball down the field a little bit more.
I didn't like that answer, Grody, but it's also somewhat refreshing excuse me, and how honest that it was. Because I would like Matt Nagy's offense to have some identity by this point. I would like to know that we have a quarterback lining up under center every play who we can count on, and they can be dangerous from anywhere on the field. But I don't know that anybody would disagree with the notion that we don't know what the identity of this offense is yet, and they are not at that point that Nick Foles is talking about. Is there anybody there who's trying to sell that line?
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I think Matt Nagy knows exactly what the identity of this offense should be, because he's been trying to implement it and make it happen since he got here in 2018 to, you know, get the ball down the field, quick decision making, you know, some elements of a spread offense, and be more than just Allen Robinson out there, like everybody else on this offense, including offensive linemen, tight ends, receivers, has been totally and completely inconsistent except for Allen Robinson at this point. And that includes the quarterback. Like Nick Foles has been completely imperfect in the two starts that he has had with the Bears. So I think that the team, every single one of these receivers and tight ends loves the concepts of this offense. I mean, from day one, I mean, it is a receiver quarterback friendly offense when it's working right. We just haven't seen it working like the machine that it is supposed to yet. I mean, there's still a chance it can under Nick Foles because he does know this offense, but it's a matter of actually making it happen on game day. And we just haven't seen it.
Grody, my stance going into this game, I've said it a few times before, I'm sure I'll say it a few more times before we're done with Friday's show, is this is the game where I have the highest expectations all year for the Bears offense to this point. They came back against Atlanta when Foles came in and struggled. Everyone scores against the Falcons. Then Foles' first two games are Indy, number one DVOA defense in the NFL, before Darius Leonard got hurt. Then short week against Tampa, number two DVOA defense in the NFL. Now they have extra rest, and they're going up against the 25th-ranked Carolina Panther defense, who also 25th in rushing yards allowed against. This is a team you can run on. This is a team you can throw on. This is a team you can score on. Bears with extra time to prepare. I'm expecting the best offensive game from the Bears this season. What about you?
I don't know if I have that same confidence. I mean, I like what you're saying, but Carolina, they've been, they've won three in a row. So they're that team right now because they started off their year 0-2, and it felt like a team you could put your foot on and say they're done. But they've won three in a row. They've got something going with Teddy Bridgewater, who we know can be kind of quarterback manager. And for whatever it's worth, Bridgewater beat the Bears last year. But in that game against Atlanta, and understanding it's Atlanta, Bridgewater did go for 313 yards and a couple touchdowns. You know, they had a 100-yard receiver and Robbie Anderson. DJ Moore is always dangerous with, he's averaging 16 yards per catch. And then, of course, Mike Davis, who was close to 100 yards. He also had 9 catches for 60 yards. So that's my way of saying that I think Carolina right now, I mean, I don't think they're going to stay this hot all year, but I do think they're going to ride what they have done, having won three straight games. They've got something going on. Hopefully the Bears defense is at that big playmaking as they were against Tampa Bay. However, the Bears have been something this year defensively that I hate, and that's bend but don't break, because it is risky, it is stressful, and the Bears defense has allowed over 100 yards per game this year. So that's been kind of jarring this year. So yeah, I'd like to think that the Bears could put their most complete offensive game together this year, but they've got problems right now, problems that could be fixed. But, you know, with James Daniels out, and he was, by the way, officially put on IR today, they still don't know who is it going to be Alex Bars? Is it Rashad Coward? Do we see a Jason Spriggs? Is Sam Mustipher going to make it into the game? There's problems on that offensive line right now. So to just hope and assume that the Bears offense is going to be complete this week, I'm not feeling the exact same confidence until they've got that offensive line straightened out.
Are they saying they don't know, or are they just saying they're not telling us who's going to replace James Daniels or what's going to happen up front?
What they've said, man, is that it's possible that we have a competition going on. And this is what Juan Castillo sort of alluded to, that it's still possible that Rashad Coward could push Alex Bars. My guess is that it'll be Alex Bars to start the game. But if he struggles, like he did at least at the beginning of the Tampa Bay game, it's possible we see Rashad Coward come into the game at some point in time. Maybe Jason Spriggs, which is interesting, though, because we know that Rashad Coward obviously can play guard. He played it all of last year, but he was working out mainly this year in training camp and in the practices at the tackle position. So it's interesting that they are considering that possibility, but they know they've got to get it right. If they don't see what they need out of Alex Bars, they'll make a quick replacement in that spot.
All right, Grody, favorite time here. Give us the Bears nuggets.
All right, brother. We've got the speaking of Bears offensive line coach, Juan Castillo. He is going to be away from the team at least through Sunday. He had a close contact away from the team, test positive for COVID-19. To his complete credit, Castillo self-reported it. Told you guys, James Daniels officially placed on IR. And yes, Sam Mustipher, kid out of Notre Dame, elevated to the real roster. Deion Bush missed practice today with a hamstring injury. Sherrick McManus and Brent Urban were eliminated, limited. Nick Foles said that Darnell Mooney has the ability to be a great receiver in the NFL. And then back to Twitter and Eddie Jackson, something that he had tweeted out. He said, no targets, as in Tampa Bay didn't target him. And we thought, well, that must mean that he's happy and he's bragging about it. And he said, no, he wants to be targeted because he wants to make interceptions. So Eddie wants the damn ball in his area.
All right, Mark Grody, Bears.
Bears. Bye, guys. Bears.
Talk to you soon, buddy. That's Moby Ditka. He will be reporting for WBBM, of course, this Sunday, Bears and Panthers. Big news in college football, Rami. Nick Saban has tested positive for the coronavirus. So Steve Sarkisian is taking over game prep for Alabama-Georgia. The game, as of now, is still on. And, you know, college football, it's shocking. Who could have seen this coming? That the sport, without doing daily testing, would be the most disrupted among all of the sports that we've seen. I believe, did I see it right, Shep, that the Florida-LSU game got postponed as well? Yeah, Florida-LSU has been postponed. That's 30-plus games now that have either been postponed or outright canceled in D1 major college football so far this year. So, again, Nick Saban with the coronavirus.
I knew college football was in trouble from the jump, just because of how much that is to try and contain a college football team and an entire college football league. But I really knew that they were in trouble and were probably not treating this as seriously as they probably should. When I heard Ed Orgeron just sort of flippantly say, yeah, like half our guys have already tested positive for the coronavirus, I don't know what the big deal is. You know what I mean? I knew that there was some trouble on the horizon when I heard Ed Orgeron say that. And now, right there in the same conference, SEC, you have the biggest name in college football, the biggest coach, most successful coach in college football, contracting it. And I got to imagine, Danny, he's had some close contact with some of his players and other members of his coaching staff, and he's probably not the only one in the Alabama football program that has it. But play on. Play football this Saturday, young man.
Roll damn tide.
Exactly.
That's right. That's right. That's all that matters. Dodgers on top of the Braves, 2-0, by the way, which is the score or the discrepancy between Atlanta leading that series. And as I said it, it just switched. It's now Dodgers 5-0 on top of the Braves. So Braves or the Dodgers looking to cut the deficit in half. Braves on top of the series, 2-0, but trailing in game 3, 5-0. Speaking of baseball, Bruce Levine has weighed in with a report on Tony La Russa and the White Sox. I will read it to you next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
On the score.
Russo, you know, had so much success, speaks fluent Spanish. So, you know, a bright guy. And, you know, he likes analytics too. I mean, he was doing the analytics stuff before it was even called that. And all these guys are open to ideas. There's not a manager in baseball now, you know, that isn't embraced with the analytics or at least listen to what the front office says. Even Bruce Bochy, at the end. I mean, there's guys that didn't come up that way, but everyone's, taking that knowledge now and doing it, you know, combining it with their own savvy.
How do you do, fellow kids?
That was Bob Nightingale with Anthony Herron earlier today. Thanks for hanging out on the Danny Parkin Show. Rami Makhlouf in all week long. Bruce Levine has reported, numerous sources have told me that Tony La Russa is seriously looking forward to conversations with the White Sox brass about the job. Sox have asked for and received okay from the Angels to proceed. Bob Nightingale first to report that. La Russa is on top of analytics side as well. I admit that, like, some of this is just his age. Like, I admit that. But it also just feels like it's straight propaganda. Like, oh, no. Tony La Russa loves analytics. I mean, just who? Of course he does. Really? Okay. That's Tony La Russa? That's what we associate Tony La Russa with in 2020? Like, modern, acquiescing to the will of the front office, you know, going based on the computer for lineups and feel and pitching changes and having pregame plans approved by your general manager at who's going to pitch on what day. Like, that's what we associate with Tony La Russa, that type of flexibility and deference to people above him, to Rick Hahn in this case. I'm sorry. I do not believe that Tony La Russa at 76 years old is going to be that type of manager for a baseball team. I don't believe it.
Is Tony La Russa doing what we all do, which is say what you think they want to hear at a job interview? Like, oh, you want analytics? I love analytics, dude. I have been doing analytics forever. Watch my analytics. Is that what Tony La Russa is doing right now? Because I've never heard his name attached to an analytically minded franchise or ever heard analytics in terms of his strategy attached to the name of Tony La Russa. Is this just a guy who's saying or putting out there through various outlets and sources what he thinks the White Sox and White Sox fans want to hear right now?
Does he, like all the other platitudes you say when you're interviewing for a job, like, I'm forward-thinking, I'm proactive, not reactive.
When they ask you what your weaknesses are, you're like, I just work too hard. I can never shut it off.
I care too much. Yeah. I'm collaborative.
I care too much. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
But the more we hear, Danny, I know you don't want to hear this or believe that this is real or a possibility. J.P. Morosi told us earlier he sees a 30% chance that Tony La Russa will be the manager of the Sox. You hear Bruce Levine say what you just read there. There appears to be fire around this smoke, man. I don't think that this is just some kind of propaganda media tool that the White Sox are using to either throw people off the scent of A.J. Hinch and make them feel better about a guy who has cheating in his past, or just to drum up some hype for Tony La Russa as Jerry Reinsdorf's buddy if he's looking for a managerial job elsewhere. There is too much smoke here for there to be no fire. And all I'm saying that fire is that this is a real possibility, around a 30 possibility, like J.P. told us earlier.
Do you think Rick Hahn would hire him?
No, but I also don't think that Jerry Reinsdorf isn't having some say in this whole thing.
Sure.
They can put that out there all they want, but I'm not convinced that Jerry Reinsdorf is not making some kind of power play or making sure his voice is heard in this whole thing and that Tony La Russa gets a real look at being the manager of the Sox.
Okay. I mean, clearly they're going to interview him, and clearly him and Jerry are tight, and clearly Jerry and or Kenny are talking to Bob Nightingale and Bruce Levine, and okay, fine. It's out there. Tony La Russa is going to be the first manager up. I just do not believe Rick Hahn will sign off on it. I don't believe he'll hire him. I think that it can't be overstated enough and reminded to people enough. They can't hire A.J. Hinch until the World Series is over, and right now Game 3 of the NLCS is being played. So the guy that everyone says is the top guy, if it's not Tony La Russa, like if the guy who makes no sense doesn't get the job, the guy who makes all the sense
all
in the world,
sense in the world, right.
Yeah, is going to get the job, but the guy who makes all the sense in the world, we can't talk to for another, I don't know, 2-3 weeks. So therefore, this thing's going to be out there until then. I just find this song and dance unnecessary and a little insulting to White Sox fans who have watched Rick Hahn.
No, we can't be insulted any more than we already have been.
It's impossible? Okay. Yes. Well, I don't want to be offended on your behalf. So I'm just curious, like, you, is it a nuisance? Does it bother you? Are you amused? Like, what adjectives to describe your feelings as White Sox fans, Tanny and Shane, around all of this reporting on Tony La Russa? What adjectives are we using?
I can't sum it up in one adjective. It's so, I guess you could say, puzzling. I just don't understand what the end game is here for anyone. Like, for Tony La Russa, why would you want to come back and do it? You're a Hall of Famer. You already got your World Series rings. I get it from Jerry's perspective, kind of. You know, you're trying to right wrongs from the past, you know. But I don't understand it. Like, why? Why would anyone want to be a part of this? Why would Tony La Russa want to inject himself in this situation with a young team when he's been out of the game? That's the whole thing. It's not necessarily a Tony La Russa problem because he's had success and, again, Hall of Famer. But just being away from the game for so long is really the red flag here for me. You know, that, you know, I'm not an ageist by any means, but when you're not on the field level every day with players now, I think that's the biggest problem of all of it.
We cannot blame Tony La Russa for this. If I had kids, and again, I don't, definitely don't have kids, and I put my kid in front of an outlet, gave her a fork, and she stuck it in the outlet, I'm not going to blame the kid. Tony La Russa is the kid in front of the outlet in this scenario, and Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and Jerry Reinsdorf are the parents. I'm not going to blame Tony La Russa for wanting this job, for wanting to be a part of what could be somewhat plug and play. If they make the necessary additions this offseason, could be somewhat plug and play, get himself another championship with a stacked core. I can't blame him for wanting to, but the decision making of the parents for giving their child a fork to stick in the outlet is a little troubling.
The big revelation.
It's a graphic analogy.
Yeah, the revelation here is that are the White Sox a destination where people would be willing to leave comfortable jobs on the West Coast to come and try and get a ring? Like ring chasing with the White Sox? Is that what
we're
looking
at here? I think
this
is a super attractive job right now, man. I do. And JP said the same thing. We talked to somebody yesterday. I mean, I don't know how you could say that this is not an attractive job right now for a Major League Baseball manager and for a guy like Tony La Russa to come out of semi-retirement for. I mean, this, as Shane just laid out, this team is ready to win. This team is primed to win and hit, and that core of guys that they're building this thing around are ready to hit their prime and start competing at the major league level. Yeah, I take this thing if I'm Tony La Russa. But Shane is 100% right. I don't know why, if you're the White Sox, if he's at the top of your list, why that guy is the one who's at the top of your list.
Right, which makes me think he's not at the top of the list. I believe in logic, man. I believe in the say-it-out-loud test.
I do, too. There's just too much smoke now. There's when it was just Bob Nightingale, okay. But then it's the Angels have cleared him to interview. Then Bruce Levine puts out the report that he just put out. There's too much smoke there for there not to be some fire and to at least believe that 30% chance again that J.P. Morosi put out there earlier that Tony La Russa would be the manager of the Sox.
Yeah, they're clearly interviewing him. Like they're clearly giving him his day.
And I have no problem with that. Like, I don't think anyone should, really, giving a Hall of Famer
turn over every stone, sure.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier in the 2 o'clock hour. Just getting intel from baseball minds is not a bad thing. Ideally, you won't have to name another manager for another decade. So get as much intel as you can while you can.
I agree with that. I just think the idea, the positioning of him as being the top choice is the part that's weird. It's not talking to him that's weird. It's not that he would want the job that's weird. It's the positioning that he is the top choice. That's the part that just doesn't, vibe. You can't square that peg into the round hole. For me personally, I have a very hard time believing Rick Hahn feels that way, and we know it's Rick Hahn's choice, so therefore I still will say it won't happen. Sure, talk to him. Who cares?
I think it's just semantics that the top choice, number one choice, clubhouse leader, because he's literally the only guy that can interview for it, I think, right now, unless you get permission from another team that's eliminated to do it. But I still don't think, they wouldn't do that. But in terms of guys who you can interview, there's not many out there.
I've seen Sandy Alomar Jr. on some lists. He's available for interviews right now.
They should call him for sure.
Yeah, think about the Bulls hire, just another Reinsdorf franchise, right? They said that they interviewed 10, 11 guys. And then Billy Donovan became available, and they interviewed him, and they moved quickly because they knew he was the one. This, if La Russa got the job, it'd be like, we're interviewing him first. He's our top guy. We're giving him the job. The first guy you interview is often not the guy who gets the job. It's like you're checking something off on a box. You're doing a favor. Like, it just – hiring practices suck in that way. And so this feels like something for Jerry. But, hey – if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and managers don't make that big of an impact, and this White Sox team is super talented, that maybe it won't matter who's on the bench. Because I agree, it's a really attractive job, especially if they're going to spend in free agency. Now, it seems good.
Rick Hahn's only interviewed one manager, or at least had one round of managerial interviews. Is this like to get Rick Hahn some practice how to interview a manager? And like Tony La Russa will stage how the interview should go for A.J. Hinch? Maybe that's what we're doing here.
Interesting.
So he doesn't blow it with A.J. Hinch? Because A.J. Hinch is going to have suitors. If he leaves the White Sox front office without a job offer, he's going to have suitors. Like, you already saw Detroit is connected to him, and they'd be interested. So are they doing a dry run for Hinch or Cora?
You sit him down, you're like, yes. Tony, what have good GMs asked you in interviews before that I should be asking other managers here in the future? Like, just pick his brain about how to do a good manager interview and then move it along for the real candidates.
I like that.
I mean, that's not that far-fetched. Like, here you go, Tony. Here's a nice check. Would you like a job, by the way? Would you like an advisory role? Yeah, actually, I would. Okay, cool. We're friends again. Yay. And then that's that.
Okay.
Are we in agreement that this isn't really Rick and it's more so Jerry? Because
yes.
I think Rick is still a phenomenal decision maker, and I'll back him until the cows come home. But it's not. I don't think that this is his decision. Has that been talked about today when I was running back and forth?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense that it would be Rick's decision. Like, why would he do that? Why would he fire old school Rick Renteria, old school Don Cooper, do the rebuild the way he's done it, to hire the oldest of old school Tony La Russa? I don't believe it.
If nothing else, we got like 3 days of content out of this.
Yeah,
that's
maybe
true.
Even more. We're still going to talk about it tomorrow because something else will come out tonight or tomorrow morning. More information on Tony La Russa and the fork in the socket.
I'm just shocked that it's been this long of a story, but then they can't interview A.J. Hinch until after the World Series. So that maybe it's that simple.
I agree. I think that's the guy, but I do think that he is getting real consideration. And Shane, I'm 100% in agreement with you. Whatever consideration he's getting is either coming directly from the owner's office or is happening because the owner has asked that he be given that consideration. Because that, Danny, I'm with you. That's the only way that this can make sense. That's the only way that I can make sense of this thing, that Tony La Russa's name is even in the running, is that his buddy Jerry Reinsdorf wants him to be. For whatever reason, Jerry Reinsdorf wants Tony La Russa's name out there.
The Dodgers, Max Muncy, just hit a grand slam, 11-0 in the first inning. So certainly looks like they will be winning that game. Now it is 2-1 Braves if you give this game to the Dodgers in the NLCS. ALCS game with Houston and Tampa follows the NLCS game tonight. Rami Makhlouf is in. We'll put a bow on this thing before Joe Ostrowski on the score.
How about them Bears?
How about them Bears? We're going to have Joe Ostrowski on in just a minute. See what he's doing tonight. I hope he took the Dodgers in the over in that NLCS game. Man, I was wrong about the Bills yesterday. Titans are good, man. Titans are real good, Rami.
They don't look pretty winning football games, but they just keep on winning football games. They are what the Bears are trying to be, which is win ugly and do it consistently.
Correct. I thought that it was pretty clear that the Chiefs were the best, and then the Ravens were the, like, it was 1A and 1B. They were very close, and then there was a big gap between whoever the next best team both in the AFC and the NFL is. Like, I didn't think anyone was particularly close to them. But the Ravens have looked a little inconsistent on offense. Lamar Jackson passing's been a little inconsistent. He hasn't gotten on the same page with Marquise Hollywood Brown. Sometimes they've been hot, sometimes they haven't been. I don't know. Maybe Tennessee, who went to the AFC Championship game last year and is undefeated again this year, maybe they deserve to be up there. But it certainly feels like it's the Chiefs, and then even with what happened with the Raiders last week, that there's a gap there at the top. I don't know who the third best team in the NFL is right now.
I think if Tennessee gets into a game with a team like the Chiefs, a team that relies on a high-powered offense and a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, although he's the only one, there aren't any like him. But teams that rely on that franchise QB, the Titans' strategy method, I think, is to just drag you down to their pace and their style of football and keep your offense off the field as much as possible, and then let Derrick Henry make your defenders look like small children flying through the air.
Yes. Yeah, like he did a job. that's
basically the game plan for the Titans.
It's a good game plan.
Sure.
If you can execute it. They're a tough team to, you know, come back on if they have the ball late and they just have to get, hey, Derrick Henry, we're going to give it to you three times. Get 10 yards. Okay. He could probably do that fairly consistently. Do we have Joe? I'd like to know who Joe thinks. Joe Ostrowski coming up after us here. Joe, you with us?
I'm here. What's going on, Danny?
What's up, buddy? Who do you think the third best team in the NFL is?
Oh, man.
If you agree with the premise that you would say Chiefs and Ravens 1 and 2.
I don't see how you can't agree with that. I think everybody, even after the one time that they played this year, people walked away from that game and said, okay, the loser is number two right now. I'm hesitating to put the Steelers in there. I think there's a chance that they could win this weekend. Seahawks, I can't because of their defense. That is a wonderful question. It's the Packers. It's the Packers right now. It is. The way Aaron Rodgers is playing, certainly.
Okay.
How close are the Rams?
The Rams, I think, are decently close. Their defense has impressed me this year. And I started thinking about it with the Titans last night, man. They destroyed the Bills. That was that was an evisceration. And it's like, so they were in the AFC Championship game last year. They're undefeated. They destroy the Bills. Tannehill looks awesome. No, Derrick Henry's the best lead protector in the NFL. Like, I feel like we should at least include the Tennessee Titans in this conversation.
Long shot. If they go on a run, let's say they lose three games this year, can Tannehill be the MVP?
Wasn't he the highest rated quarterback in the league last year, or at least was into week 16 or 17? Yeah, I don't, probably not, just because of name value. I think that factors in a lot when you talk about MVP voting among the media. I don't think he could just because of name value, but if you were asking who's the most valuable player and you look at the style of football that the Titans play and the role that Ryan Tannehill plays in it, you could make the argument that he's deserving of being in that conversation, no?
Before last night, my issue was they weren't playing any defense. But Josh Allen was in that MVP conversation, and look what they were able to him last night. Yeah, I mean, I think the narrative for Russell Wilson is just too far up the track right now. Like, he would really have to play poorly the rest of the way to not win the award. But if they're going to win 13 games, he should be in that conversation.
Yeah, right now, Russell Wilson has a quarterback rating of 130 compared to 111 for Ryan Tannehill, and Russell Wilson has 19 touchdowns against three picks when Tannehill has only 9 touchdowns and 1 interception. So,
yeah,
I think the numbers also right now are so heavily slanted in Russ's favor that that's a huge gap to make up. But, I mean, there's two-thirds of the season left, so it certainly is possible. And, yeah, if they become the one seed in the AFC – then I guess that changes things. But, yeah, for now, I would say top five is probably the highest Tannehill can finish in MVP voting. How are you spending your night, Joe?
I don't think I'm going to quit the White Sox like Dan Bernstein earlier today, but I'm going to talk a lot about that situation. And Tony La Russa, Scott Miller from Bleacher Report will be joining me at 6:30, Evan Silva at 7:20, and we'll start to preview Bears-Panthers here.
Okay, enjoy. My premise on Bears-Panthers is – they're the 25th-ranked DVOA defense in the NFL, coming off back-to-back games against 1-2. Has to be the best offensive game of the year.
My betting angle for the game is the Bears is your best teaser option of the week, one of the lowest totals of the week, and there are plenty of them. You can get the Bears at +8.5. I think that's an extremely strong leg. They're going to be in the game in the end. I just don't know if they're going to win it.
Good stuff, Joe. Have a good show. We today, who did we talk to? We had Tom Theron, we had Mark Grody on, and we had John Morosi. Very much enjoyed all three visits. Nick Shepkowski is our executive producer. Thank you, sir. Shane Reardon helps out throughout all of Scorantine. Chris Tannehill makes us sound better than we are each and every day. Rami Makhlouf will be in the rest of the week. Thank you, sir.
Thank
Joe
you.
Strowski coming up next. My name is Danny Parkins. This is the Danny Parkins Show. On the Score.
Thank you. I will drink until next morning. Thank you.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.